Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
I move that the convention suspend the procedural rules. I move all votes cast by delegates be reflected in the official record, and I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics on the ground at the Democratic National Convention.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
So we've wrapped up day two here for them, but it was the first day we've been in Philly for the Democratic National Convention, and it was a big day. History-making day, Beth.
Well, I think, Sarah, it's only appropriate to start off with, how you doing?
I'm still flying pretty high. I hope we all are after we've officially nominated a woman for the presidency. I mean, it's just so big. And it's like, you don't have to say the, like, presumptive nominee of a major party. It's just ceiling shattered.
It was a pretty dramatic day and pretty dramatic imagery around that shattering of the ceiling, and certainly a lot of energy in the hall. So I guess that is a good place to start. Just we notice immediately real contrast between what we're seeing here and what we saw in Cleveland.
Absolutely. Well, and especially it was a very sort of bite from choices we made. We went to a really cool event with an organization called Ultraviolet about sort of calling out sexism. A very feminist-focused event. Then I went to see Idina Menzel perform in sort of honor of the Women of the Congress, a very woman-focused event. And then overall, the whole evening was very focused on the power of women, which, you know, it's hard not to be energized by that as a woman.
No, I agree. I mean, it's interesting to be here as a Republican, especially as a Republican who doesn't associate myself with Donald Trump, right, or what is being run against here. So it's more just this fly on the wall feeling. And I think as a woman, it's pretty complex to disagree from a policy perspective with a lot of what is being discussed, but also really appreciate the significance of a woman being nominated. And not just a woman being nominated, but the thread of leadership here from women, and the constant return to just women speakers, the visuals, the number of young women who are present here. And that's another key point, I think, and a difference from Cleveland to here, the sheer volume of young women really changes the atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, I just feel like there's sort of, with the history being made, you know, at the very end, for those of you who didn't see, they sort of showed pictures of every single president. And then after at Obama's face, it sort of, it looked like it was shattering. So it just shattered big and wide. And as it shattered and fell away, Hillary. Oh, I'm confusing the words. Hillary was sitting there and she said, basically, you know, this is about all of us. And I might be the first female president, but to all the little girls who stayed up late, you know, I hope it doesn't end with me. And they sort of zoomed out and she was surrounded by all these little girls. And I mean, I keep thinking about how, if I would feel differently about this moment, if I had little girls and not little boys. Was that sort of heavy for you as the mother of two little girls?
It's exciting for me as the mother of two little girls. I'm thrilled that this has happened. And so they don't have to grow up not knowing this. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I think that's really significant. It's a very weird emotional state to appreciate it so much on the level of being a woman, and to struggle with the fact that it's still sort of not my view of government. Like, you sit there and you want to be 100% on board because that would feel good.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was about feeling. I mean, it was a super well-produced event. You know, I sort of teetered between finding it a little bit emotionally manipulative and also being like really appreciative of the hard work that goes into that, the serious production value, the effort of so many people. I mean, that speaks to the genuine enthusiasm that people have about Hillary Clinton. And so all that's good. And it's just, it's complicated for me because as the mother of two daughters, yeah, of course. And as a woman myself who, you know, desperately wants to see more women in leadership, it's fantastic.
Well, you know, the history-making aspect of Hillary Clinton's nomination, you know, here I go. As a woman running for office is not complicated for me. It's very powerful. It never stops being, you know, emotionally intense to just think. You know, when I was in college, we used to do these programs where we would go to high school students. I did it for the first time. I can't remember what kind of it. I think it was an American Association of University Women event. And you would sit in a crowd and this woman would come up and she, or man, and you would say, like, stand up if you think in your, this was always the question I remember. Stand up if you believe in your lifetime you'll see a woman president. And I just think back to that time when, first of all, that was just this abstract question. I think about how many people didn't stand up. I think about when I was in college and I was asking this question and I was being asked this question. You know, I wanted to think it would happen and I believed it would happen. But that's just different. It's different from being optimistic that one day we'll have a woman running for president and then to have the reality of it being true. It's just such a big historical moment, and it's, as a woman currently running for office, it's really hard to sort of take in. And I think there's a part of me that's like holding back because I feel like if I open the floodgates and just really feel it, and I cried a lot last night, but not like I'm truly capable of crying. So we'll see what happens on Thursday when I, or maybe I'm just holding off because I'm, you know, I want her to win. I don't want her to just be the first female presidential nominee. I want a female president. And so the history-making part of being here is so big to me. It's, you know, in the same way it's hard for you to articulate because it's difficult, it's hard for me to articulate because it's so, so big and so, such a powerful moment for women and for me as someone who's running, as someone who's worked for her, just on a lot of levels. There's a lot going on for me, basically.
Well, I think the other thing that I have been feeling, and I felt this particularly when we went to the event with Ultraviolet, which, by the way, we'll link up in our show notes, is a fantastic organization. If you are interested at all, and it's from a fairly, I mean, fairly bipartisan place. Yeah. There's certainly a preference in this election for one candidate, but... in how women are covered in the media, what it's like for women to run for office, you should definitely check them out.
It's just purely feminist. It's not trying to get, like, Democratic women elected. It's just a purely feminist organization.
But my thought from that event forward has been a lot about, and I think this is a thought that a lot of people have about President Obama, too. The first is significant and enormous and wonderful. And inadequate, right? Because you don't want President Obama to be the last black president, and you don't want President Obama to be the only prominent person in American politics of color. So it's like you want it to be a domino effect, mm-hmm. not just this single shiny
moment. The moral
licensing. Exactly. You don't want too much of the backlash and too much of the moral licensing where people say, okay, see, we did it. We're good for a while. And I'll tell you that I had this thought on the plane and wanted to do a blog post, and then my travel to Philadelphia was cursed, I think. So I ended up not being able to do this. But on the travel here, I was reading Avik Roy and listening to Yuval Levin and thinking a lot about where the Republican Party is and why. These are really smart people whose opinions I respect, and I don't take issue with anything that they're saying about, you know, conservatives aren't good at our messaging. Conservatives have given way to white nationalism in a lot of ways. I agree with all of that. What I think is missing, and what I think the Democratic Party has really seized on here, is the influence of women. And here, the generational divide between women is really palpable. You can feel what this means to older women, and that's something different than younger women. And to have that breadth of experience, that's really different than, well, we have a women's breakfast, or we have a women's caucus, or whatever, you know, where you have this tiny focused effort that says we're reaching out. Mm-hmm. That's really different than being top to bottom influenced by and led by women. And I think that is the missing ingredient for the modern Republican Party. But let's talk a little bit more about sort of the advance work, because I want to be specific about the differences that we're noting mm-hmm. between the two conventions. First of all, just the crowd size.
Yeah, so many more people.
And the fact that we were at the Republican convention on what should have been its biggest night when Donald Trump was speaking versus the roll call night for the Democrats. I mean, there was not a seat to be had around us. We were able to kind of stretch out and be comfortable in Cleveland here. Yeah. It is. We were packed in.
Yeah, like sardines. And when you're that high up in an arena, you really notice how packed in the people are. And my friends from Monday night were saying they were sitting on the steps. It was standing room only. And I think, you know, it's only going to get more and more crowded with Obama speaking tonight and obviously Hillary's speech on Thursday. So, yeah, it's really crowded. It's really – and what I've really noticed with regards to the, you know, in particular the Bernie or bust people and the crowd of people unhappy with the Democratic Party is, now I can't speak to Monday, I wasn't here, and we didn't really have any booing or shouting yesterday, last night at all. So, but I read somewhere that somebody said there's more protesters but fewer police, and there is like this like rowdy contingent, and I don't know if the Democratic Party is just used to it because there's such a broad coalition, but it just seems to be like a, instead of the sort of aggressive, now I don't know what would happen if a Tea Party or showed up and dropped a banner at the Democratic National Convention, if people would be like forcing them out, but it just seems to be more like an eye rolling and a definite frustration, and people are, they want the Bernie or bust people to wrap it up, but there's not a like, leave, silence them, we don't want you to say anything, we want you to go, you know, like the booing happened and people just talked over it.
And I think that's another function of women in leadership. Yeah. You had with Representative Fudge and with Stephanie Rawlings, is that right? Mm-hmm. A real no-nonsense kind of process yesterday. I think that exactly the right people are leading the convention and led the convention through the nomination process, because tons of space was made for Tulsi Gabbard's speech and you know, the other speeches in support of Bernie as the nominee. Tons of space was made during the roll call. People were incredibly respectful of Bernie.
Now, there was that moment with the Oregon roll call where the woman that was telling Bernie's people's name tried to get the microphone away from the guy, and he was not letting it go, and he kind of pulled it back and made her speak into it, which was an interesting moment. But other than that, yeah, I mean, it's very female-focused. Everywhere I went, every event was about women, and not just sort of Hillary's nomination, but Nancy Pelosi's big thing is when women succeed, America succeeds. And so all the, they brought every single, I told Beth that was such a powerful moment for me. They just brought every single female member of Congress and just let her talk. They were just like, okay, come on, ladies, let's all come out and you just say where you're from. And it was also really funny at the Idina Menzel thing. They went down the line and they would say, like, I'm Debbie Wee Wasserman Schultz from Florida. And they just sort of were quickly introducing themselves, and it sounded very much like the Miss America thing, you know, where they stand up and they say, you say, I'm Miss Kentucky, and everybody cheers. And I thought, man, I like this version so much better, where it's elected women standing up and the crowd cheering from whatever state they represent. So that was really, you know, all day long. I went to Facebook. Facebook was holding this big event with Glamour, and it was Lena Dunham and Chelsea Clinton and America Ferreira, who Chelsea Clinton, or Lena Dunham and America Ferreira also spoke. Elizabeth Banks was sort of the MC for the night. It was just, it was heavy on the women focus, and you really, it's sort of like going, like I said about Ghostbusters, until you go to a movie where a woman isn't a love interest, until you go to a political convention where it's just woman after woman. And listen, the night we went to at Cleveland was, they had several women speakers. They had women talking about Donald Trump and his daughter introducing them. But for me, it feels different because, like you said, it's this bottom-up leadership, and it's not, it, you know, a lot of the women at the Republican National Convention felt like, well, we're coming out here to show you that there are women here and that we're okay with women. Whereas here, it's like, here's all our elected leaders talking about, you know, reproductive rights and family leave, and here's the stuff we've already done, here's the stuff we want to do. And it just felt, like you said, like it felt more sort of foundational and who we are as a party, as opposed to a gimmick, really, like you said.
Well, and I think from even putting aside from a policy perspective what you would typically put in the bucket of women's issues, reproductive rights, equal pay, family leave, there's a difference in leadership style that comes through. At the Republican convention, what I felt was sort of a quiet resignation of everyone who is not excited about Donald Trump, but the idea that we have to be on board, we have to go through the motions here and make this work, and so we will do that because we are kind of a party that thinks about duty and fidelity, and our convention has to pretend that we are all really excited about this. And I think this convention has not pretended that everyone is really excited about Hillary Clinton. I think this convention is trying to get everyone there, but it's really made room. I can't imagine the Republican Party making the kind of room for Bernie Sanders that has been made here and for those supporters, because the effort has really been, now, granted, behind the scenes, and to be skeptical, I think the leak of the emails probably influenced a lot of this.
Yeah.
I mean, the party has been called out at a really awkward time to be called out. But I do believe that there is something, in broad generalizations, there is something about female leadership that tends to value disagreement more than traditionally male leadership, that tends to be less threatened by disagreement than more traditionally male leadership. And I think that is an overall vibe.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, And Hyacera is that once-daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look," and I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets. With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at bollandbranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I think we just need to comment on, like, the production value of this so event high. Is very, very high. It's there are constantly signs being passed out. We have a whole stack of signs.
I mean, literally, towards the end of Bill Clinton's speech, I had a stack of signs in my lap, and I'd be like, hold on, I have a sign for that. And I would have to, like, flip through my stack and be like, okay, I've got my Stronger Together sign. Like, there were so many that I was like, wait, I got a sign for that. Like, it was pretty amazing. And, you know, the videos themselves, there was more than one. There was lots of them, and they were so, so well done.
Well, it was a clear progression of events. There was a story of last night, and it was sort of the story of here's what Hillary Clinton has been fighting for her whole life, and here's how that culminates in her as a competent, qualified, experienced, steady leader. And I think
and it was like, you know, Hillary is a healthcare, it's helping in healthcare. Hillary with women and children. Hillary with social justice. Hillary and her work, foreign policy. Like, it was, like, very clear. And, you know, what I kept thinking about is there was all this really great commentary after Cleveland about, like, where were the personal anecdotes? Like, there wasn't really, especially from Tiffany and the kids, like, we were on vacation here and he did this. Or at my birthday party, you know, like, he did this. And there wasn't, I'm this other real New York City real estate tycoon, and I dealt with Donald Trump here, and this is how amazing it was. It was like people who worked for him, and it was just very light on actual personal anecdotes. We were drowning in personal anecdotes last night.
And
like
it was long,
yeah,
and laborious, because while the content was interesting of most of the speeches,
she also just has a long career, man. There's a lot to get through.
While the content was interesting in most of the speeches, the speakers themselves were not all the most talented orators, and so it was a little bit difficult because I think the crowd chattered a lot. Like, it was very loud. You didn't get the sense that everyone was listening most of the time. And I think one of the most interesting moments of the night got lost a little bit in all that crowd chatter because it was buried in so much stuff. There was a person talking about the aftermath of 9/11, and I can't remember his name right now, but he delivered what I think is a devastating attack on Donald Trump about how after 9/11, Trump's businesses took money that was intended to help rebuild New York, even though they had been relatively unaffected by those businesses. And the story was Donald Trump used 9/11 as another opportunity to make money. It reiterated this idea of selfishness and narcissism and dishonesty, really. And it was a really, really effective attack. And I think it was sort of muddled by just the volume of things surrounding it and all the activity in the room.
It was U.S. Representative Joseph Crowley, and he spoke about... I was really sort of impacted by the woman who spoke before her, Lauren Manning, who is a 9/11 survivor, had burns over 70% of her body, and talked about how Hillary Clinton kept checking on her and kept, you know, talking to her. It's, you know, the new narrative is that Hillary Clinton, you know, Ezra Klein wrote this great piece on Vox about why there's this gap between the people who know her and what people think about her. And a lot of it was that it was so, her, everything she does is so relationship based. And you really, it was like a parade of these relationships. There was a gentleman, as I'm scrolling through the program, I just realized how incredibly many people spoke. Like, I totally forgot about Cecile Richards, but there was a really powerful, statement from, I can't remember the guy's name, because there were so many people, but he struggled with a particular form of dwarfism, and he talked about how he'd known Hillary for decades, and when he was a little boy, and he had a back brace, and next time she noticed he didn't have a back brace, and like all these sort of stories of, this was my struggle, this is how she fixed it. And then we got to the big speech of the night, which was Bill, who I love. He walked up to the podium in his particularly Bill style and said, in the spring of 1971, I met a girl, and really took us on this rambling, folksy, but sort of like policy focused speech about, this is what she's done for her entire life. The theme was, she's a change maker. We also had signs for that, obviously. Change maker signs. But like, it was this very, it was long, and it was, you know, chronologically going year by year can feel like sort of a trod, but he really made it this, you know, peppered with all these really sweet stories about him and Chelsea watching the police academy, and Hillary saying she was the designated worrier for the family, which I sort of identified as a mom. And, you know, the moment I turned to Beth and he talked about the day Chelsea was born and Hillary's water breaking. And I just thought, we're talking about a woman nominated for president. We're talking about her water breaking. Like, this is just so amazing and kind of crazy. It's not something I ever thought I would hear.
Before Bill, the one other thing I wanted to comment on was the mothers of the movement, the women who had lost children to, you know, police violence over the last year or so. We heard from Sandra Bland's mother, from Trayvon Martin's mother. That was an incredibly brave thing of those women to do. I thought they were incredibly graceful. They were so positive in the face of these tragedies. I mean, just if you could just lift that moment out of, you know, what is otherwise sort of a political zoo, you know, and say, like, I would go to any forum on earth to hear from those women.
Yeah.
Because the way they talk about what's happened and what they're trying to do with what's happened is really, really inspiring.
The moment I kept thinking about it, and it really was, you know, I'm starting to cry again because it was such a powerful moment when Trayvon Martin's mother says, I'm an unwilling participant in this movement. Like, I didn't want to be here. I didn't want this. And that really, really hit me hard. And it's something I think about, you know, that moment is very emotional for me as a mother of sons, because I just think, I don't have to teach my sons. And they talked about that. Like, we shouldn't have to teach our sons to be careful. No parent should have to teach their child that your life is valued less because you're a black boy. And, like, just all these things. And it was a very powerful moment. And they did a good job of laying the framework sort of I mean, I think that, you know, Beth and I talked about this afterwards. I feel like the death of their children is sort of a uniquely political situation. It feels like a political act because of the current climate we're in. And they did also a really good job of laying the foundation. It wasn't just like, we're here to, because it's important to us and we like Democrats. Like, they talked about how, they put this whole video about how Hillary was supposed to came and talk to them, and she was only supposed to be there for 30 minutes, but she sat down and the 30 minute meeting turned into 2 hours, and she really took on their anger and listened to their grief and their frustrations and said, you know, here's what I think you can do. And you hear her saying, like, I think the best thing you can do is stay together, unite your voices. And then she just talks about, like, the part I wrote down is, like, she says our children's names, which was really touching to me, like, this sort of, which is a big thing with Black Lives Matter, you know, say their names. And that's another thing, like, they came out and left to standing ovations to people from the Democratic, you know, the Democratic Party chanting Black Lives Matter, which is not, you know, not just pat ourselves on the back Democratic moment, but that's a pretty powerful sort of progression for such a young movement. Black Lives Matter is not a very old movement. And, you know, to have gone from just this, you know, street grassroots organization founded not very long ago to now being embraced and chanted, I think what a testament to that movement is how sort of I feel about it.
You really see here the influence of even going back to Occupy Wall Street and then the Bernie Sanders supporters and the Black Lives Matter movements. I mean, you really, really see the power of what seems like maybe a temporary blip, but really taking hold and influencing leadership. So I think that's been awesome to see. A big takeaway for me from attending both conventions, and this gets back to Bill's speech a little bit, is I can't overstate how different it is to watch something in person versus watching it on television.
Yeah.
One example of that was very clear last night, other than Meryl Streep,
her flag dress, don't forget the flag
which
dress.
I loved, but the celebrity presence fell flat in the hall. Oh. There were a lot of people, but those were not the moments that the crowd was most energized by. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe Lena Dunham and America Ferrera more so.
In the musical performances.
Elizabeth Banks was not particularly well received. Deborah Messing. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just not a high moment at all.
Yeah.
And it felt to me like, well, maybe that's more for television. Maybe that comes across differently.
Well, and I think that must be what they were there for. Here. Like, Elizabeth Banks was like sort of a, like a, what's the word I want?
Like an MC.
Like an MC. And so I think that was like for the flow of the TV. And Deborah Messing introduced people, like, most of the celebrities were like introducing, or America Ferrera and Lena Dunham were really good, because I think they were, made it clear, like, we're not up here as, like, we are celebrities, but they were making very distinct sort of points about their identities, like America Ferrera as the child of immigrants and Lena Dunham as a feminist and a woman with a sexual assault survivor with a chronic reproductive disorder, and sort of made those points about, like, this is why she appeals to our particular problems and identity. And but, you know, I thought about that a lot last night because I saw, you know, there was a lot of star power in the DNC, and Beth and I've had this conversation. I really think it's important. Nancy Pelosi actually addressed this at the Idina Menzel thing. She said, somebody asked her, why is it important to have celebrities? And she said, because they draw attention. And for me, you know, I keep thinking about this statement I heard on the Robcast by Richard Rohr, and he said, culture always wins. Culture always wins. And so, for me, with the celebrity component, it's not because celebrities are always right, but it's because they drive the culture, and who are celebrities and how they act as celebrities is sort of, it drives the culture, and it's also sort of indicative of the culture and how we think about things. And so, you know, I think it is really important to have sort of, when you feel like that, but sort of the star power is brighter on one side or the other, and it's sort of star power that is has always interacted sort of, because it's, what's interesting is it's not like, you know, you're rolling out George Clooney, even though George Clooney takes political stances. Like, these are celebrities who take political stances, just like Scott Baio and Antonio Sabato Jr., but it's just like the sort of the wattage is different. But I think, you know, I think Nancy Pelosi's right. I don't think it means you're more right or you're less right, but I do think it is a powerful tool for a political party to have, because it lends to that production value, it lends to the narrative, it lends to, and it brings attention, you know, like, if people want to pay attention when famous people are talking, it just is the way it is.
I just think the influence of media has become so clear to me by watching a story being created versus what's happening just happen.
Yeah.
And how many journalists are here. I mean, similar to Cleveland, the media presence is enormous. It doesn't feel quite as enormous here as it did in Cleveland.
Yeah, it does. There's so many more people.
Many more people, right. And the city just feels so different. It's more spread out. There are Bernie supporters everywhere throughout Philadelphia, certainly more than in the convention area. But so just seeing how, like, you can look at this and say, I understand why the media works as it does, because there's so much unfolding, and you do have to, like, wrap up these little sub-stories and these little packages to create some interest and just to make it digestible, because really the program last night was not digestible.
No. Hillary Clinton's career is not easily digestible. It's been very long.
But it makes you realize the power that media outlets have in translating that story. And also the power of social media, because I was tweeting while I was stuck on the plane for close to 3 hours in Baltimore. We couldn't land in Philadelphia because of storms, and so we sat on the plane forever, and I was able to follow my Twitter feed. And just seeing the extremes of commentary about what was happening, and I tweeted some of this, you know, depending on whose timeline you're following, Michelle Obama's speech was the most amazing thing ever, or it was so disingenuous because everybody knows she hates Hillary Clinton. And I tweeted some of that, and I was amazed by how you could follow whatever story you choose to follow on social media if you aren't witnessing it yourself. And that's a difficult thing. But we should talk about Michelle Obama for a second, because I think we are in unanimous awe of the 14 minutes of oratory that she delivered.
Yeah. I was going to say something really quickly, though. I just thought about the celebrities. I think the other thing to remember is that this is it's not just a media event. This is also a convention for the party. And the celebrities are twofold. I think they're around, like, the Alicia Keys performance. This is a thank you to the people who work in the Democratic Party and the delegates. This is like, here's your treat for working so hard and nominating Hillary Clinton and getting us here. You get to see Alicia Keys, and you get to see Meryl Streep, and you get to see all these famous people. And it's a thank you to the famous people who are fundraisers and who use their wattage to bring attention to these things. This is your thank you. You get to come to the Democratic National Convention and be a part of this really cool event. So that's another thing. It's like, it's a relationship thing. It's a thank you to the people that are here and a thank you to the celebrities. And luckily it works in this sort of symbiotic relationship where everybody feels like they're getting something really fun out of it. Like, Lena Dunham was posting from the floor. She's getting to meet all the delegates. She gets to do that. That's really cool. And the delegates get to meet Lena Dunham. So it's a win-win when you have something like that too. I sort of was thinking about that as sort of just we forget that this is also a convention. It's always funny to me when they're doing like Robert's Rules of Order. Do I have a motion in this giant arena? But hey, when I guess you have a national party, when the national parties get this big, that's sort of the nature of the beast. But Michelle Obama is the queen of the world. That's my summary.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable?
Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
What I thought was so unique about Michelle Obama's speech is that it was of, by, for, and about women.
Yeah.
And it was not a woman delivering a speech that any man could deliver. It mm-hmm. was a woman's speech. And I loved her introducing motherhood as such a driver of decision making. That rings really true to me.
Yeah.
I loved that she did not pretend any emotions. She didn't smile much yeah. in that speech. You know, she was serious. She was measured. It just felt very personal and very, very well edited and well done. I think the fact that it was short is a lesson for everyone. Mm-hmm. These, you know, 50, 60, 70 minute speeches do not pack the punch
no.
that a well-delivered brief address did. So I thought she did a terrific job, and it was one of the best speeches I've ever seen.
Well, what I said to my texted to my husband is Michelle Obama's not going to send her baby girls out into Trump's America. Like that was my favorite part of the speech, where she was basically like, "Look, I am not sending my daughters are about to become adults. I'm sending them out to the world. This is not going to happen, people." And also the incredibly powerful moment of when she talks about that she wakes up every morning in a house built by slaves, and then watches her two, you know, amazing black girls play on the lawn with their dog. And just she really, and the other thing that I think was really impactful for her speech is you sort of got this window into the Obamas. They've been, I think about a lot both how Obama and how Hillary handled the vitriol directed at them. And one of the first things Michelle Obama said is, when they go low, we go high, which is amazing. What an amazing thing. I'm going to totally steal that and teach my kids. And when I was at the Facebook Live event with Chelsea Clinton, she said, like, that hit me so hard. I'm going to teach my kids that. They're going to get tired of me saying that. I say it so much. Like, and they talked about, what do you do when you're, you know, your children have to listen to somebody questioning their father's citizenry and their religion and all these things. Well, when they go low, we go high. And so her, you sort of got this insight into, like, how they've been this picture of class and grace and the last 8 years, despite the, you know, the ugliness that's existed in the system, because, you know, no matter what you think about Barack Obama and his family policy-wise, you really can't argue with the fact that the way they've carried themselves and handled the last 8 years has been sort of a masterclass in dealing with a situation like that. And so she sort of, like, opened up a little window in that, too, which I thought was really, really great and insightful and super smart. Like, I'm gonna offer you a little insight and be vulnerable with you, and then we can have this exchange, which is super smart. But she just amazing. But I kept thinking when everybody was like, Michelle for president, where's she going, what's she gonna do? I'm like, you know what, you would rip her apart just the same way you would anybody else who ran for president. Let's not all pretend because she gave this amazing speech that if Michelle Obama ran for president, they wouldn't be, you know, people wouldn't go after her just as hard. So
I think that her speech in a really effective way played to the theme that I see, which is the Democratic Party. And this has been building for a long time, and it's really irritating to a lot of Republicans, just as I think what Republicans do on the same token is really irritating to a lot of Democrats. You know, the Republican Party has tried to own religion mm-hmm. for a long time and sort of be the moral party. And the Democrats are saying, no, we're the moral party. We're the party that owns tolerance, compassion, respect for others, dealing with criticism with grace, you know, that is a theme. And it's a struggle for me as a Republican to watch, because I do tend to lean so much more progressive on social issues. But then I struggle with sort of the policy outcomes of some of those discussions. And so it's just a very clear thing that's being built here to say, nope, like, we're the party that's right about everything on just a human level. And that theme is being so much more effectively than at the Republican convention, because there's such division in the Republican Party over social issues, that the Republican Party is not able to find that thing that they can keep reinforcing, that common thread throughout every presentation the way that it's happening here. I think another good thing for us to just maybe wrap up on is, like, on a personal note, it is exhausting to be at these things.
It's so tiring. We're tired.
The people who work these events and who are constantly going one meeting to the next and having to actually do work to put it on, that takes unbelievable stamina, because just attending takes a stamina that is daunting.
It really does. It really does. It's all, you know, it's going till midnight at the earliest, it feels like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, and then they have these briefings at like 8:30. Who is at those things? I signed up. I was so optimistic, but we're not making it. So,
and the logistics are really difficult.
Yeah.
Just getting a train or a cab or an Uber or whatever. It's kind of like reality has to be suspended for the time that you're here, because it's just the effort of being here, getting from, at one point, like, we picked up our luggage and we were like, yay, we accomplished something. We made this happen.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's really difficult, especially when you're spoiled like I am in Paducah and everything is so easy. Getting places, picking things up, doing, like, you can accomplish so much in such a small amount of time. And that's just not the reality here. The one thing I was going to say, too, about, last thing I was going to say about Bill's speech before we wrap up is he had a really great moment where he talked about the real one and the fake one, the real Hillary and the fake Hillary. And I think I've told this story before, but when I met Bill Clinton and asked him for advice for someone considering public office, he said, meet as many types of people as you can, because people will want to portray you as two-dimensional. And, you know, the best way to, you know, be a real person. And maybe that's really why Bill and Hillary Clinton have this long history with the Democratic Party, despite the fact that most America can become caricatures. You know, he's the cheating dog, she's the ambitious bitch. But these people in this convention, most of them, I would say, have met them, have relationships with them, especially when you're talking about the party faithful. And that's why you get the cheers that you do when Bill Clinton comes in out, because they know this man as the third dimensional complex human being that he is. They know Hillary Clinton as the complex human being she is. And so often that gets lost. And I think, you know, the conventions are the party's time to sort of really make that case. And if last night was about making Hillary Clinton like a three-dimensional person with all these relationships and stories, they did a dang good job.
So we're going to try to do sort of an observations episode like this every day while we're here. We appreciate your patience with us. The production value of these is probably going to be lower than we would like, because we just can't kind of make everything happen. We don't have all of our equipment, and the editing process is just too time consuming for us to be able to both be here and put out fantastic quality episodes every day that we're here. So thank you for your patience, but we do want to give you as much information and insight as we can. And we hope to see some of you on Facebook and Twitter throughout the week. We'll talk with you again tomorrow. Keep it new on still.